WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Today we have the second of a two-part interview with film director and screenwriter Paul Schrader. Yesterday we discussed his two new films. He directed the film Patty Hearst, which opens September 23rd, and he wrote the screenplay for Martin Scorsese's controversial new film, The Last Temptation of Christ. Today we'll talk about Schrader's earlier films and about growing up in a strict Calvinist home in the Midwest. Paul Schrader wrote and directed the films Blue Collar, American Gigolo, Hardcore, Light of Day, and Mishima. He wrote the screenplays for Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, both of which were directed by Martin Scorsese. Sin, sex, and redemption have been recurring themes in Schrader's movies. Schrader grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in a family that followed the strict teachings of the Calvinist Church. When he was young, he planned to become a minister. He didn't enter a movie theater until he was 17 because of a church ban against seeing movies.
Well, it banned what they called worldly amusements, which included things like card playing and smoking and drinking and dancing and theater attendance. And this came out of Prohibition days. And the ban was actually instituted in 1928. And, I once, as a child rather, impassionately queried my mother about this. I think I wanted to see some Disney film. And she said to me, it doesn't matter. The quality of the film doesn't matter. It's the industry that is evil. And so I think that was the position.
Did you have a sense of what you were missing?
No. And I'm actually very happy about having missed all those.
No, really? Come on.
Well, yeah, because, really? Because you are imprinted as an artist or as a person by, mm-hmm. How you come to a specific field. And I came to films as a college student, and the first films I really saw or paid serious attention to were films by Bergman or Buñuel, Antonioni, Bresson. And that was my original imprinting in films. And my peers and coevals, were imprinted with Westerns and Disney films. And when they say, I want to make the movies that I loved when I was a child, they think about those films. And when I say that, I don't think about those films. I think about, the kind of childhood background and about the films I first came to love. I came to films as an adult and then later learned to love them as a child. So it has given me a unique perspective and a unique place in this business, and I've never really worried about anyone doing what I'm doing because no one has my perspective.
What's the first film you saw and what effect did it have on you?
Well, actually, the first film was a Disney film. Was Absent-Minded Professor, and I snuck...
Is that the one with Jerry Lewis, or is that the Nutty Professor?
That's the Nutty Professor. This is the one with Fred McMurray.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the one about Flubber.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I snuck into the balcony, and I sat there watching this, and I was wondering what all this fuss was about. And then about a year later, a friend of mine took me to see Wild in the Country with Elvis Presley and Tuesday Weld. And I sat there, and I realized, aha, this is why they don't want me to go. Here's the problem.
And what effect did that have on you, seeing that?
Well, I had developed a mad crush on Tuesday Weld.
And did that make you feel bad?
No, it made me want to see more movies.
Yeah, so what made you so passionate about movies?
Well, it was a very luxurious forbidden fruit. I mean, not only could you be a rebel and do something that upset your elders, but you could also wear the mantle of respectability while you were doing it. It was like having your cake and eating it. It was a rare opportunity, to be a rebel without it, having to do things like break into cars.
Did you ever see a movie and feel that it was having a harmful effect on you? Did a little voice in the back of your mind remain that said, this might hurt me, this might damage me in some way?
No, I'm pretty, I have a pretty solid sense of who I am. There are movies that are damaging, and there are movies that I would not watch, and I would not want other people to watch. You know, I mean, society does have the right to protect itself against certain forms of violence and pornography.
So what kind of movie wouldn't you watch?
Child porn. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't watch violent sex. I would not watch immoral violence. Violence that is graphic just to titillate. Mm-hmm. It's kind of debasing, you know. I don't want to sound like a censor, and at a certain point, everyone has to make their own decision.
So some people, I'm sure, would have liked to censor part of Taxi Driver.
Yes, and I don't think that, that kind of censorship is in any way appropriate, you know. And the problem with censorship is that it's a case-by-case situation. And, you know, you can, certain things you just say, well, this is too much.
Paul Schrader is my guest, and he wrote the screenplay for the new film, The Last Temptation of Christ. He directed the forthcoming film, Patty Hearst. He collaborated on several films with Martin Scorsese. In addition to Last Temptation, they collaborated on Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, for which Schrader wrote the screenplays. He also wrote and directed Hardcore, Blue Collar, and American Gigolo. When you started to go to the movies, did you feel hopeless about catching up, that everybody had grown up with movies and you hadn't, and you had this whole wealth of movies to see before you could really know them?
I came in as a film critic, and I went to UCLA Film School. And I remember my first year in Los Angeles, I kept a notebook. And I averaged, 22 films a week for that year. And this was before cassette, so I had I was jockeying from one little university cinema to the next, and that's all I did for about 2 years, was caught up.
You had intended, I think, to be a minister, and then you became a film critic, and then a screenwriter and director. Why had you wanted to be a minister?
Well, it was just sort of part and parcel of the background. You know, those were the most respected figures, and I've always had this sort of proselytizing urge, you know, to go out and communicate and convert. And so that was rather natural.
Do you feel like you channeled that urge into movies?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious.
One of your movies, Hardcore, is about a father from a background similar to yours, a Calvinist, mm-hmm. in Grand Rapids. And this father's daughter runs away to the city where she starts working in pornographic movies. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if your parents felt like the father in this movie when you left home and started just working in regular movies, if the movies were so extreme to them in the first place that it might have been hardcore.
You know, I suspect they may well have. They've had to make some hard compromises over the years. So my mother's dead, but my father has had to, you know, in order to keep his family relationship.
Did they ever break the ban to see any of your movies?
I believe so, but it's not a subject that comes up.
Yeah. I was wondering if ordinary life, or if the film world, seemed exotic to you after leaving Grand Rapids. When I say ordinary life, I mean a more secular life.
You know, people came to Hollywood, who come to Hollywood, they talk about how tough it was. You know, before I moved to New York, I was in Los Angeles 14 years. And strangely enough, it never seemed that tough to me, because I had come from a background where people were not trying just to tell you how to behave. They were trying to tell you how to think. And you had to fight off the mind control aspect of it. I got to Hollywood, and I said, these people don't care how I think. They just want me to behave in a certain way. This is no problem. So I didn't see it as that difficult.
To what extent have you kept religion in your life?
Well, I'm Episcopalian now. I moved to the less strict side of the aisle. And that kind of imprinting you have as a young adult is part of your permanent makeup.
Mm-hmm. You've been collaborating with Martin Scorsese on and off since the mid-70s. The first time you collaborated was on the film Taxi Driver. You had written the screenplay, and you asked, I think, that he direct the movie. And I think you wanted him to direct it after seeing his film Mean Streets. Right. What was it about Mean Streets that you knew was the right sensibility for the film you were making, Taxi Driver?
Oh, it's just a passion, you know, and also the perversity, you know. Someone who is willing to grab the thing, put it between his teeth, bite hard and run, you know. I don't want to use words we can't use on language, but someone who has the guts to do it.
Okay. Now, in Taxi Driver, your screenplay is about a lonely, alienated, psychopathic taxi driver. You've described the taxi as the perfect metaphor for loneliness, a man driving around the city in a steel coffin. And his alienation erupts into a bloody killing spree at the end of the movie, which he thinks of, in heroic terms, he thinks he's helping to clean the city of the pimps and the filth. I want to play from go ahead.
What's interesting about that is, in the film, he fixates on two women, one of whom he can have and one of whom he can't, and of course he wants the one he can't and doesn't want the one he can. And out of this dilemma, he decides to kill the father figure of the good girl, who is a politician. And when he cannot do that, he fails, he kills the father figure of the bad girl, who's the prostitute. And what's interesting, in his mind, there's really not much difference. They're both, there's these competing father figures. It's just that in society's mind, of course, he becomes a hero because one of them was a pimp and not a politician.
Sounds a little Freudian. Were you in Freudian analysis at the time?
No, subsequently.
Okay. Well, you wrote the journal, the diary, for Travis Bickle, the taxi driver, which De Niro just gives a brilliant reading of in the movie. I want to play some of that, and this is from the record, so it's excerpts edited together from the film. Mm-hmm. So this is Robert De Niro over a score by Bernard Herrmann with the screenplay by my guest Paul Schrader from Taxi Driver.
May 10th. Thank God for the rain, which has helped wash away the garbage and the trash off the sidewalks. I'm working long hours now, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. It's a long hustle, but it keeps me real busy. I can take in $3.50 a week. Sometimes even more when I do it off the meter. All the animals come out at night. Buggers, queens, fairies, dopers, junkies. Sick, venal. Someday a real rain will come and wash all this scum off the streets. I go all over. I take people to the Bronx, Brooklyn. I take them to Harlem. I don't care. Don't make no difference to me. It does to some. Some won't even take spooks. Don't make no difference to me. Each night when I return the cab to the garage, I have to clean the back seat. Some nights I clean off the blood. 12 hours of work and I still can't sleep. Damn. Days go on and on. They don't end. All my life needed was a sense of someplace to go. I don't believe that one should devote his life to morbid self-attention. I believe that someone should become a person like other people.
The tone of writing in that seems so perfect for the character.
I love that line. I do not believe that one should devote his life to morbid self-attention, which, of course, is what this character does.
Oh, precisely.
Every moment of the day.
And the next line is just the most perfect line about alienation I think I've ever heard. I believe that somebody should become a person like other people. It's just the perfect expression of alienation. How did you know, not being a psychopath yourself, how did you know the tone of voice to get for this? It just seems just right.
Well, I wrote that script in 10 days, in two drafts. It jumped out of my head like an animal. And so it was a cri de cœur. It was a cry from my heart. I've fallen into a difficult period in Los Angeles where I was living in my car and just sort of driving around. and having a lot of trouble sleeping. And finally, I got a pain in my stomach, which turned out to be an ulcer. And I went in the hospital. And then while I was talking to a nurse in emergency, I realized I hadn't spoken to anyone in several weeks. And when I was in the hospital, I realized that that's what I was. I was like a taxi driver. I was like this person who was floating around in this car. And I got out of the hospital, and I wrote that script, like I said, in 10 days.
Did being in that car, driving around in it, almost living in it, increase your sense of detachment and alienation, of being separate from?
Yes. I mean, particularly in Los Angeles, where I was. I wasn't in New York at the time. You know, you really, you know, you do feel, you know, like you are alive in a coffin.
Let's get back to the tone that you actually wrote it in. There's something almost Old Testament about the tone. Someday a real rain will come along and wash all the scum off the streets. But that's that apocalyptic sense.
Yeah, I really, you know, that was my first real script. I'd done one thing before. And so, I mean, I didn't know how you were supposed to write scripts yet.
But had you studied the journals of people who had become assassins or murderers?
No, I was actually surprised. Yeah, Arthur Bremer's journal came out after I had written the script. And I read it, and I was very surprised to find that the voice was almost identical. And I think that, you know, the reason that people, psychopathic people, have attached themselves to this film is because the voice is absolutely authentic.
Did it scare you that you were able to so authentically and so intuitively capture a psychopathic voice?
Well, you know, it scared me that I was at that place at that time. I mean, the person who wrote that script is long gone, and I don't even know if I would recognize him if I saw him.
I read that De Niro had you record the diary that you wrote, and I was wondering how you read it into the cassette machine, into the tape recorder when you made it for De Niro.
I don't remember.
Okay. Do you still know all the lines by heart?
No. In fact, I never go back and see any of the films. You know, I saw Patty Hearst when I handed it in April, and I'll never see it again.
Well, why not?
I don't like to go back.
Listen, I've seen Taxi Driver lots of times.
I don't like to go. All I see is the bad. I never see the good.
Uh-huh.
I just like to, you know, keep moving.
Another Taxi Driver question. De Niro, in addition to having you record the journal entries, also wore your shirt, your boots, and your belt during part of the screening for the movie. Was that his idea or your idea?
That's his idea. You know, that's sort of the way he works. It's not this unique to that particular project. You know, he's done similar things in other films.
You had mentioned that you think one of the reasons why psychopaths attach themselves to Taxi Driver is because the voice is so authentic. What was your reaction when Hinckley said that he was he had seen Taxi Driver and he wanted to impress Jodie Foster by attempting to assassinate the president?
I was in New Orleans at the time scouting locations, and they came over the radio that this kid had tried to kill Reagan. And he was from Colorado, sort of a white bread kid. And I said to the person sitting next to me, I said, "It's one of those Taxi Driver kids." And I got back to the hotel, and the FBI was waiting for me. And in fact, it was one of those Taxi Driver kids. You know, the film didn't create them. They exist before the film and after the film. And they attach themselves to many things. More, you know, it's just actually sort of rare that they attach themselves to a good film. More likely they attach themselves to things like advertising.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were always warned about the danger of films. Did any of that come back to you after this?
No.
Not relevant.
I think art really works, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it is possible through artifice to, you know, vicariously purge yourself of these dangerous feelings.
I want to talk more about your work, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is Paul Schrader, and he wrote the screenplay for the new movie, The Last Temptation of Christ. He directed the forthcoming film, Patty Hearst. He also collaborated with Martin Scorsese on the films Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, for which he wrote the screenplay. Schrader wrote and directed Hardcore Blue Collar, American Gigolo, Light of Day, and Mishima. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Filmmaker Paul Schrader is my guest. Three of your films, Taxi Driver, Hardcore, and American Gigolo, are set in part in the sex trades. And I was wondering what your interest was in there.
Well, it's a lot of adolescent acting out. I came from a rather puritanical background. And so, at a certain age, you've got to trash the candy store.
Is that what you saw yourself doing?
Yeah.
When you started directing as well as writing, what was the most difficult thing for you to learn about directing?
Visual logic.
Mm-hmm.
I'd come from a background which believed that ideas were in the province of words. If you had something to say, you use words to say them. And it took me a long while to understand that images were also ideas, and that they were not synonymous with words, and that the image of a fork is not the same as the word fork. And it sounds rather simple, but I tell you, it took me a long time to figure it out.
Well, how did you learn how to think visually?
Well, I fell under the tutelage of a wonderful architect named Charles Eames, and that played a very important role in understanding that the poetry of and the logic of imagery.
You've also said that you had to learn how to not be too literary when you were writing screenplays. You said, I don't think a movie should have too many good lines, at most 5 great lines and 10 good ones. The rest should be absolutely ordinary and banal.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can overwrite a movie and start to call attention to the language, unless that is your intention, unless language is the subject matter of the film, such as in a David Mamet production. But if you are trying to, convey a quotidien, a daily reality, then you've got to restrain yourself from getting a little excessive in that area.
Pauline Kael, the film critic, was one of the people who was very influential on you when you were first making movies. I think she encouraged you to be a film critic instead of going into the ministry, helped you get into film school, and then you decided to write screenplays instead of to actually be a critic. What's the experience like for you now when she reviews one of your movies?
Well, we had a falling out a number of years ago. I think basically she thinks I should have stayed a writer and never became a director. And for some reason, she has not reviewed the last 3 or 4 of my films, which is actually fine with me. I regard it as something of a favor because I do not think those reviews would be good.
Why don't you think they'd be good?
Like I said, I don't think she feels I should be a director. I think she thinks that directors should be more sort of visceral people. It's all right for a writer to be cerebral, but not a director.
You said that you are no longer the same person who wrote Taxi Driver, that you don't really have those feelings anymore. At that time, I think you were really motivated by certain demons, by alienation, by loneliness. You're now married, you're a father, and I figured loneliness wouldn't have the same pull on you that it did then. Are there different things that motivate you now in your writing, or even different demons that drive you?
Yeah, certainly. And you miss those old demons, boy, because those are powerful engines, and they really drive you hard. It was actually easier to write then because you had no choice. You were just running to keep the demons from swallowing you up. So today it's a little more difficult. You have to use your imaginative powers and your creative skills to a greater degree.
What kind of compromise do you feel that you have been or have had to make in your career between writing screenplays that fit your vision, that communicate the ideas that you're interested in, and you really do communicate ideas in your screenplays, and making something that's actually saleable?
Well, I mean, I want to communicate. This is the movie business is the business of mass communication. If you're not interested in mass communication, you shouldn't be in this business. So, whatever your personal visions are, you have to put them in the seat alongside the idea of mass communication. So it's just not possible to say, I don't care who sees this movie. And so I try to think of things in commercial terms. You know, how, will people want to see and hear this? And so I don't avoid that. However, it is not possible to escape the idiosyncrasies of your own psychology. I remember when I did Cat People years ago, and I said to myself, now I'm going to do a film that is not personal. I'm going to do a genre movie, a horror movie, a special effects film. It's not going to be about me at all. Well, I look back now at that film, I think it's more personal than any of the others.
In what ways?
I just feel that the character of the zookeeper is really me. And when I set out to make the film, I didn't think that at all. So you can't really escape yourself.
Is that considered a liability in parts of Hollywood, that you would put yourself into it and that you would end up putting certain ideas into a screenplay, even unintentionally?
Well, it is a liability. And the fact of the matter is that I do exist sort of on the cusp of the industry. But that's fine with me, you know, as long as I can keep working and doing the films I want. And the industry understands very well that last year's cusp can very easily become this year's center.
Several of your films, like Patty and Hardcore, are in their way about leaving the family and about breaking away, either voluntarily or involuntarily, from what your life has been. When you left your home and when you broke away from the church, was that a wrenching experience for you?
No. I mean, it was more like the way a bullet must feel when it's finally discharged from a gun.
You want to explain that?
Well, I've been waiting a long time to get out of there, and I came out with a bang, you know, and I took off and didn't look back.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking with us. Paul Schrader's new film, Patty Hearst, tells the story of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst by the Symbionese Liberation Army. It's scheduled to open September 23rd. He also wrote the screenplay for the new Martin Scorsese film, The Last Temptation of Christ. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.